This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Hi, I'm Susan Morrison. I'm the articles editor of The New Yorker. And on Randy Newman's first album, which I'm sure a lot of you have, there's a banner that says that he created something entirely new under the sun. And in the 40-odd years since then, he has done that again and again and again. Singer, songwriter, composer, please welcome Randy Newman.
Thank you.
Randy and I did this at the festival years ago. When I was talking to you downstairs, I had exactly the same feeling that I did last time that we met, which is you seem like such a cheery, friendly guy. I mean, for you know, where is that person who sort of peeks out from all of your more kind of misanthropic songs? That's a little surprising.
Well, I don't know what to say. I've always been that way. I like to make people laugh. I'm not, generally, socially, I never gloomed around too bad. But the last time I talked to anyone was about a year and a half ago. So, I mean, it's easy. I saved it up, you know.
Right. So, sweet guy, dark songs. It's very similar.
They're kind of dark. But see, the thing about
dark-ish.
It is, I always thought, a darker shade of pale.
Well, I was about to say that it's the same kind of tension, the same kind of dichotomy that is at the heart of most of your best songs. You know, your music pulls in two directions. You have these incredibly sweet, beautiful melodies, and then you're brought up short by these unsettling lyrics.
No.
So I wanted to ask you, was that something you kind of hit on as a technique early on, or is that just your worldview? Is it?
No, something? It's. It's something I kind of can't help, I think. What I did do early on was I sort of got bored or despaired of writing love songs, you know, which is 90% of the repertoire. I mean, it's what people like. Even fans of mine, which there are some out there, their favorite songs of mine are songs like Feels Like Home.
Right. And you don't value those particularly, do you?
I don't value them enough. I mean, I should write more of them. But they interest me a little. I hate to admit, because you can't say it to people without them thinking, oh, you think I'm stupid, huh? They just have always meant a little less to me than things like a song like Davy the Fat Boy, which just earned it over its first dollar in 40 years. It's made $1.12 now.
Well,
so I was always more interested in individual character. But I always felt songwriters, I couldn't see why you couldn't have the same latitude a short story writer had. Now, the medium doesn't really fit it very well. Mm-hmm. But I don't see why a kid writer can't say, I left home the other night. I'd never been away before. My mother didn't call me in the first week. I went as far as Norfolk. And by what he says, he talks about his mother on this road trip he's on. He says, I didn't think about my mother too much. One thing like that, or, you know, just talk about something like that. The reason is the kids, he's not going to get any girls that way, and he's not going to make any money. But, I mean, it interests me more somehow to hear it. It would, yeah. I think.
You like to write about cities. You like to write
after, you're not poet writing of love
geography.
Songs. Yeah.
And and I, it's always been interesting to me to know that very often you write these songs about cities that you've never been to.
A couple times.
And
yeah.
What is it about them that sparks your imagination?
Oh. Well, in the case of you know, when Kurt Weill and Breck write about Chicago, how silly their picture is of them, you know, the gangsters and stuff. But it's kind of fantastic. Like when I wrote about Baltimore, I saw pictures of Baltimore in a National Geographic. And I saw it from a train also. And that was it. And I could see all that marble, and it looked different. And when I went there, I was right. Not necessarily about the city dying and all that stuff. They were mad. But the marble, and it looks different. All the cities in there, it's great. All these, Wilmington and Baltimore and Philadelphia and Boston, New York, I mean, it may not be news to you, but when you come where I come from, a river, you know, brick, it's different.
Well, thinking about the names of the cities, you know, maybe think about how one of the things that makes the character songs so incredible is the attention to syntax and diction. Like, you have a remarkable ear for like speech patterns across class lines.
That's how I start them, how a person speaks and what words they do know and what words they don't know, and
right.
Try not to make a mistake. Mm-hmm. You know,
well, how do you, to get a little biographical here, you felt like something of an outsider as a younger person. And,
yeah.
And,
what do you think? I don't feel like an insider now. Insider of what?
Right, right.
But I've had good things happen to me, yeah. But I don't feel like, I still root against the Yankees, you know? I really don't feel like I'm on the winning team.
Right.
Still, I never will.
Though
I know I did fire, I know how lucky I've been.
In this interview I'm talking about that I can't remember where it was that I read with you. You said that you quoted Philip Roth saying that thought that Jewish American artists often had a deeper connection to America as subject matter.
They want to, yeah.
That, you know, that they, you know, kind of really want to embrace it and own it sort of more.
Yeah. What he said about Irving Berlin being the second great genius after Moses, because he took the blood out of Christmas and made Easter about a holiday or something.
About fashion.
Yeah, right. Fashion.
Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's interesting, you know, talking about anti-Semitism.
That
so many of your songs have inadvertently triggered, you know, people getting hysterical, thinking that you're a bigot about about this or that. I mean, it must be a peculiar thing to have a song like Short People become such a hit because it's a great song, but kind of an accidental hit with so many people not really completely understanding it.
Short people get.
Obviously, one of the things that's great about your work is that you write with the assumption that your audience is really smart.
Yeah.
And a lot of artists don't do that. So
they are smart.
Of course they're smart.
But the audience, but the,
there are other people
smart.
Out there.
You know, I don't know what I'm doing there.
Well, so how do you... Okay, but Randy,
it's
how
a lot
do you,
of pretty bad
how do you
stuff.
Feel, how do you feel when, you know, thousands of people misunderstand something? I mean, obviously, it doesn't make you go back and then write the next song in a dumbed down
no,
way. Thank God.
I know what the limits are on things. Look, there haven't been many good lyricists in pop music in the last, since 1954 when it all started. They really haven't. I don't pay attention to it myself. I mean, a guy could sneak by me and be phenomenal. It could be Shakespeare and I might not notice. But the music of the century is about to be, you know.
Well, no, you're a bit of a rap fan, though, aren't you? I've read you say that.
There's been, you know, two, more than two, I'm sure. Really, some very good guys in it. You know, music. Kanye West is one of the best I've ever, since 1954, one of the best.
Well,
I've
particularly ever heard. In the context of what we were just saying about these character pieces. You know, that rap artists use that device in the same way that you do. Sort of have a character who just sounds off.
Some do.
And so you think that's another place where that's
yeah,
when
it's not a straight brag.
Right.
When they're willing to be, I like it when they're willing to be a little weak or mistaken, or Eminem does it or did it. And Kanye West sure does it. And musically, that stuff's phenomenal. I mean, I listen to some of it. He's got, I hesitate to use the word in the context of rock and roll, but it's counterpoint, you know, on that beautiful Twisted Fantasy, one of those songs, Monster. He's got four or five things going on. Not just over the same chord. They're going on for a while. You know, like the Bach family, you know, or something. I mean,
could you imagine,
who's got the goddamn time?
Could you imagine doing some kind of collaboration? I mean, that would be really interesting. Could you imagine doing some kind of collaboration?
Who'd be driving the bus?
But, I mean, it's one of the things that I've always wondered about your movie work is, you know, I think of your work as incredibly uncompromising, but... The one thing, you know, compromise is the name of the game when you're working for the movies. So what is it like after just doing everything you want with your own songs to have some director kind of telling you what the mood should be and to change this and to fiddle with that? I mean, how do you deal with that? Do you have any good horror stories to tell us?
But, I mean, you got to pick who you work with. Yeah, I got horror stories. But, I mean, it is the nature of things. And, you know, those days that I get to work with an orchestra are about the best days I have. Mm-hmm. And the Pixar people have been all right. I wish that I'd done more movies, you know, where I had, you know, Meryl Streep, you know, going like this and I could, you know, do...
Well, I was going to say...
I had people running around.
That in the Pixar movies, one of the things your music does is it brings a real human warmth to a screen where there are no human beings.
Is that a
particular challenge when you're writing? I mean, it must be a completely different thing writing for these computerized images.
Not because of the look. It's because they always, and they say it, and it's obvious, they're adults, whether they're monsters or whether they're toys, and they have adult emotions. And I play it that way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Some of the other guys don't, the composers. I mean, it's a different thing. But I think they wanted, at first, they definitely wanted it to be full orchestra, big deal, because they were worried about possible coldness. I don't think that's a problem the way they have it
now. I see.
Now.
And when you're writing these songs, is it kind of liberating to not be thinking about your own voice? I mean, to be able to be writing them for someone else?
Because my own voice, it also, my own voice... inhibiting to me in a number of ways. The song Like Feels Like Home, for instance. I don't think I'd have written it for myself because I'm all knotted up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I won't write myself a straight love song. There's something the matter with me.
But do you ever sing, for instance?
You know, if I wrote I Love You Just the Way You Are, You Bitch, I'd have blown it at the end. I'd have done something wrong.
We've just come up with a great idea for your next album. Randy Newman's annotations of the your own.
Really, Joel, it's such a great idea. I love you just the way you are, and I would have ruined it. You know what I mean?
Well, thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
don't be forgotten. Nobody to love. You got new baby legs that stand so low. You got to pick them up just to say hello. They got little cars that go beep, beep, beep. They got little voices going beep, beep, beep. They got grubby little fingers and dirty little minds. And they're gonna get you every time. Well, I don't want no short people. Don't want no short people. Don't want no short people around here.
That's Randy Newman performing Short People. If you've got hate mail, please send it to him. He spoke with The New Yorker's Susan Morrison in 2014.